Welcome to the Fuller Tracy audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:26 Pacific Standard Time. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And of course, today being the last day of February, perhaps we should take a look back at what exactly has been happening this month. Well, we had a steep pullback in the early week, 10 days, and then an even more impressive rebound for the majority of stock markets. When I was out in Australia earlier this month, the market had pulled back very, very sharply, and we saw that a number of higher yielding assets were right in the region of their 200-day moving averages, and subsequently they've bounced very, very impressively. As we are now at the last day of the month, a large number of those instruments and indeed indices are at either new highs or very, very close to them. A short-term oversold condition has been replaced by a short-term overbought condition. When we look at Wall Street, well, the S&P is currently closing out the week at 1,859. The consistency of the advances that we've seen over the last number of years, and particularly over the last 18 months on Wall Street, has been the progression of higher reaction lows and the fact that it has found support in the region of the 200-day moving average on successive occasions. The pullback that we saw earlier this month was a bit larger than those that we've seen over the last year, but we're still closing in on, or perhaps a little bit more than 600 days on the S&P without a reaction of more than 10%. Now, that has been a remarkably impressive advance. When we look at Europe, then it is worth highlighting the difference between the Europe Stoxx 50, Stoxx 600, which is 601 shares, and the Euro Stoxx, which is a little bit less than 300 shares. Well, the Europe Stoxx is dominated by the UK, but it also has Switzerland, Norway, and Sweden, Denmark. And those were among the countries that benefited most of, well, the UK in particular, from a weak currency, and were reasonably insulated from the Eurozone's debt crisis as a result of having free floating currencies. Well, and of course, I guess Denmark is still pegged to the euro. But when you think about what's happened in Europe and the perceptions of where the risks are and just how much assistance the banking sector within the eurozone has required, then the underperformance of the euro stocks is perhaps not so surprising. But what is perhaps most notable is that the euro stocks index has broken out of a three-year base, because we've passed the worst of the Eurozone's crisis. The ECB still stands ready to provide abundant liquidity to the banking sector, but it's been sanitizing those capital infusions. So it would be incorrect to say that the ECB has been engaged in quantitative easing, but they have had very loose monetary policy. Because the Eurozone is really only beginning to emerge from a recessionary environment, then there's substantial portions of the market are trading on really quite low valuations. And the auto sector in particular, we've had some impressive performances, but PE ratios are still really very attractive, not least on a relative basis. And the reinsurance business, it's another sector that had done reasonably well in the period up to about 2012 and has been going sideways for much of the last year, but really quite attractive valuations. And by that I mean that the estimated and forward PEs are less than 10. And that a number of these shares have yields in the region of 3 and upwards to 5%. So when people are talking about looking for value, then you don't have to look very far in Europe to find value. Whereas when you think about where is the value in the US, then the arguments center very much on momentum. That's not difficult to understand, considering that the Eurozone is coming out of a reasonably depressed period, and that the US has enjoyed a momentum-driven market for more than a year. Well, the marginal buyer is what dictates what's going to happen in terms of any market. And very much the marginal buyer in the US over the last number of years has been corporations themselves and in terms of buybacks. The Buyback Achievers Index, PKW, has been outperforming the wider market by a significant margin for the last number of years. And it hasn't always been such a remarkable outperformer. What has been the abiding factor has been that the central bank has been making abundant liquidity available, that corporations have been able to access capital, abundant capital, at the lowest interest rates in absolute terms for many of their histories. And on a relative basis, the spread over government bonds is at reasonably low levels. So that companies have been able to optimize their balance sheets, and as a result, corporations are in much better state financial health than their respective governments. But what they've also done is they've borrowed to buy back their own shares, and they've borrowed to increase their dividends. Well, buying back shares has represented a significant factor for the momentum that has driven this market. When we think about what has been driving the government bond markets, well, it was the Fed going in and buying bonds. In other words, the US government buying its own paper, which helped to drive a significant momentum move in terms of yields compressing and rising prices. And for buy and hold investors in the government bond markets, then the potential for capital appreciation superseded the potential for total return to be delivered by yield. So that was all fine and dandy until the Fed began to talk about tapering. And then people started to realize that the momentum drive that it had animated the market for such a long time was coming to an end. Well, we saw a significant drawdown in terms of yields, drawdown in terms of prices, and a rally in yields in the middle of last year. And yields have been pretty much range-bound over the last 6 months, and we could be in for quite a bit more ranging in terms of what the US Treasuries are likely to do. But in all likelihood, the low is in terms of the yield. And in terms of the total return on that asset class, then the most consistent trend in the world has lost its uptrend consistency, which would suggest that the bottom in yields is in, that the 30-year bull market is over. But major bull markets don't end with a whimper. They end with a war between supply and demand. So we're going to see, and it would be reasonable to expect, quite a bit of ranging above the low in terms of yields. Well, the ECB is, let me follow through on that point. A momentum-driven market will persist for as long as the marginal buyer is continuing to add money. Well, corporations are continuing to add money, and that is contributing to the momentum that we're seeing in a number of these markets. But where is the money for that additional buying coming from? Well, it's coming from borrowing, and that would suggest that the spread on corporate bonds is probably going to be one of the more relevant factors for watching what's actually happening in the stock market. If anything happens to the ability of corporations to continue to buy at very low rates in order to buy back their own shares, then that's going to affect the marginal buyer in the stock market. So that will be something to watch. But in the meantime, what we're presented with at present is a short-term overbought condition. And we saw a little bit of profit-taking in here today on the last day of the month. The NASDAQ, for example, was as high today. The NASDAQ 100 future was as high as 3,723 and finished out the day down 6 at 36.95. So there is a tail on that candle. And really, the most likely scenario is that we're going to get some consolidation following what was an impressive rally into the end of the month. Well, what else have people been talking about this month? And China has definitely moved front and center. When I was in Singapore earlier this month, we were spent the first day of the chart seminar talking about currencies. It seemed to be all that people were interested in, not least because the majority of people at the seminar were from the private banking sector and spread very much across a number of Singapore institutions, Singapore-based institutions. Well, what we've seen is that the Asian dollar index, which is more than 35% weighted by the renminbi, pulled back in here this week. The renminbi has been a strengthening factor for the index. It's been the backbone of the index for the last number of years, and its persistent incremental advance has certainly been a strengthening factor for the index. Well, the Chinese are no longer willing to tolerate the one-way move in their currency. They're talking about widening the bands out to 2%. Well, a 2% daily move in the currency is very large indeed in terms of the volatility. And it suggests that the 6 yuan to the dollar level, which represents the total unwinding of the early 1990s devaluation, is probably a low or a peak for the strength of the renminbi, and that we're going to see more volatility in future. The Chinese have got a substantial problem in terms of the size of the credit markets, and that is going to have to be addressed in one way or another. But one of the easier ways would be to help to boost the domestic manufacturing sector with a weaker currency. And that would certainly appear to be part of the solution at this stage. So the one-way bets that people have had in terms of the currency, and when we talked about a lot of currencies at that Singapore seminar, and I asked the simple question of which currencies have not been devalued, are they more likely or less likely to be devalued when the Japanese have pursued a devaluation and the rupee has been devalued and a number of the other Asian currencies have been devalued? Well, the only ones that haven't been devalued or hadn't been devalued at that stage were the Vietnamese dong, but that went through a devaluation 3 years ago, the Hong Kong dollar, which is pegged to the US dollar, and the renminbi. Well, the renminbi was conspicuous by in terms of its strength and the likelihood of greater volatility, even from where we are today, remains, I think, probably the base case at this stage. But of course, volatility is going to go both ways. We're going to have some strengthening and weakening, but in all likelihood, 6 is likely to be the peak for the renminbi against the dollar. Well, over the last decade, you can't talk about the strength of a currency without talking about the weakness of something else, and the weakest currency by far was the US dollar over the last 10 years, and the US dollar appears to be bottoming. If the US is coming out of what has been a very difficult 5 years, that should generally be reasonably positive for the US dollar. And the counterbalance, of course, is that Asian currencies have been particularly strong and commodity currencies have been particularly strong, and that those economies are now less able to sustain the strength of their respective currencies. So we're going to see greater volatility in terms of what's happening in a large number of currencies. Well, the other major factor that has come to the fore in here over the last couple of weeks has been Russia and the Ukraine. Well, the Russian ruble hit a new low in here today. That means it superseded the decline that it had in 2008. It's oversold in the short term, so we could get some steadying in here. But the market is not reacting well to the increased tensions that we have in Eastern Europe. It remains very much an uncertain environment. It may have been a contributing factor in the strength of oil over the last couple of weeks. But perhaps a more important factor with oil has been the opening up of the southern portion of the Keystone Pipeline in the US. And that's allowing a lot more oil to flow to the refineries on the Gulf Coast, and refined products are being exported. That's helping to narrow the spread between Brent and WTI. When we look elsewhere in the commodity complex, then we've had pretty substantial rallies right across the soft commodity complex. And from reasonably depressed levels for a substantial number of them, the tightness that has developed in a number of these markets suggests that some additional investment is going to be required. A lot of investments were cancelled after 2008. And we've seen that the vast majority of prices have contracted. So they've come back to areas of previous support, and we're seeing short covering take place in a substantial number of them. It would suggest that the lows are in, that prices have stabilized at what were previously considered historically high prices, but relative to where the peaks were a number of years ago, they're reasonably cheap at these levels. So that would suggest that the rallies that are currently ongoing in coffee and sugar and cocoa, in lean hogs and feeder cattle, as well as in a number of the grains, are representative of tightness in their respective markets. And while they've been pretty aggressive moves over the last 3 weeks, that there isn't any great deal of evidence just yet that they're over. Well, this month was where gold began to turn around. And perhaps one of the more important factors was that ETF holdings of gold have stopped going down and registered their first advance in more than a year this month. So that's a positive factor. It would suggest that the liquidation of institutional holdings has ended. And that acts as a bullish factor for gold prices generally. And gold has really stabilized around the $1,200 area. It's closing out the week at $1,326. We're seeing some consolidation here in the region of the 200-day moving average. The oversold condition has been completely unwound. It's going to have to sustain a move above $1,350 to convince people that haven't already bought that the demand side is back in dominance and beyond the very short term. But provided that prices hold above the $1,200 area, even if gold prices range, provided they hold above $1,200, then that probably represents value for a significant portion of the gold mining sector. If gold prices fell last year, gold miners collapsed, and a number of them had fallen by 90%. Relative to the gold price, gold miners are now back in the region of where they were in 2001, before the gold bull market ever took place. So the gold miners ETF, GDX, has rallied back up to test its 200-day moving average, and it is has at least paused in here. There remains some substantial reweighting and potential re-rating of the gold mining sector. When you think about just how many of their bad investments have been written off, well, those make for fantastic headlines. But when you've moved through the worst of it, then the potential for a re-rating and for some of these companies to start to actually solve their free cash flow problems is probably now the base case. And it would suggest that gold mining shares, having been the worst performing sector on the S&P 500 last year, are probably going to be among the better performers in here this year. When we look at the wider commodity complex, then the industrial metals have, for the most part, got base formation characteristics, and particularly those that are in short supply. And among those are tin and zinc, and even nickel is firming up within its base. Copper didn't fall by nearly as much as the others. It still remains very much range-bound. one of the more extreme examples of a rationalization was, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but Kazakhtym. And they're basically splitting their company in two, and their lower cost assets will remain with the rump of the company. So that represented a massive change in the structure of the company, and the share rallied by about 30% yesterday. But it's down just about 90% off its peak 2 years ago, or 3 years ago. So there is significant potential for additional upside from these levels. And that really does help to highlight just how cheap some of these industrial miners are. Well, when we think even wider in terms of the commodity complex, then about a third of the uranium complex has at least bottomed and are breaking up out of basis. The speculation is that Japan is going to start restarting some of its nuclear reactors, and that will be greeted with a great deal of enthusiasm by the uranium sector. When we think about just how much momentum has occurred in terms of Wall Street over the last number of years, and, well, there isn't really any evidence yet that it has ended, and that buybacks have been a significant factor. But some of the factors that are also worth considering is that the pace of IPOs has increased, and that IPOs have been doing very well. So that would suggest that there is a lot of money flowing into really quite speculative operations. That's generally characteristic of pretty late in the cycle moves, but also the fact that we're starting to see interest in the resources sector picking up once more. Well, that's a very cyclical market. You generally tend to get those types of moves in the pretty mature stages of bull markets. So when people look on the outperformance of the buyback achievers, then that's the sector that has benefited most from quantitative easing, and it's unlikely to continue to benefit when quantitative easing is totally unwound. And that is worth considering, and rather than becoming progressively more bullish, that is an index that one really does have to watch the consistency of the chart. And just a couple of other themes, then. Japan is continuing to consolidate in the region of the 200-day moving average. The yen is a little bit firmer in here, but it's still holding in this 101 to 102 yen region. The Topix Banks Index, though, was a bit weaker in here over the last couple of days. And it would certainly help to bolster confidence if the bank sector was a bit firmer in here, and that is probably worth watching. And the Indian market, having gone through a devaluation last year, the rupee has been really quite steady. And having pulled back from the upper side of its range and posted a very brief new high, the Nifty index found support 10 days ago and is pushing back up towards the highs. Of course, there's a very important election in India in the not-too-distant future, and I think the market will be looking for how perceptions are that who is going to win that. But the fact that India has been going sideways for just about 5 years, that the currency has been devalued and stabilized, and the potential for governance to improve in after the general election takes place is all generally positive. So India is probably a market to watch for the medium term, and not least because so many people have developed such pessimistic views about the country over the last number of years, not least because of all the bad headlines and the way women are treated within society. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.